Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. Good news for you. Before we get into that, salmon sofa is trending on Instagram.
Hashtag save the salmon sofa, which incidentally we're sitting on.
We're back. We're out of Steve's garden and we're back in the OG recording studio with the now famous, internet famous salmon sofa.
Before this was ever a thing, right, this was probably fit for the skip. Now it's got to be worth something to somebody.
It's got actual provenance, they call it.
Provenance. Patina.
Yeah, Patina probably will have.
Actually, it needs to sit in a barn, like barn find dust. It's worth more money.
Sprinkle it. I'm sure it's got some sort of dust on it already. I bet if you punched one of these cushions, it would be like, tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be.
Yeah, who would you be?
I don't know, actually. I haven't thought about that. Anyway. Yeah. Who is it? I forget. Sorry, I'm awfully unprepared. Someone on Instagram actually said that when we're finished doing this podcast, whenever that may be, that the sofa needs to go to the Dunsfold collection, which I thought was quite funny.
To be honest, I think this sofa's older than some of the things in the Dunsfold collection.
I'd love to know. It must have a date stamp on it somewhere.
But yeah. We'll have a look. We'll have a look after and see.
Good idea. Who was it? Oh, no, I can't find it. Sorry, apologies. But yeah, very, very funny. And we will actually do, you know, like some YouTubers that never reveal their face, do they?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Some YouTube channels, you never actually see the presenter.
Mate, to be fair.
Yeah. So that ship has sailed. But we should do like salmon sofa reveal at some point.
Yeah.
Because only a select few people have seen it, haven't they? Greg has seen it.
Greg
Tom Barnard has seen it.
Yeah.
Pat, obviously, has seen it.
Who else has seen it? And, the rest of it's down to their imagination. Alice has seen it, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
But it's down to the imagination. It's like an oval. Is it, would you say this is oval?
It's like a sort of half moon shape, isn't it?
Yeah. It's actually a 1, 2, 3, 4, 6-seater with matching coffee table.
It's segmented.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're
enough of that.
Enough of the sofa.
Let's get back to Land Rovers, right?
Yeah.
So I am fresh back from an MOT.
Yes, the 90, the green one, obviously, because the other one's on the road yet.
Yeah, if that gets through an MOT, I will be punching
it. That won't need an MOT by the time you finished it.
I will MOT it, though.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay, because I've been spanning on it, and you.
My 110 is a seat away from getting an MOT now.
Yeah.
Oh, and a bumper and some number plates.
Yeah, that's just here or there. But anyway, mine is passed. So I did just shy of 5,000 miles since one MOT the other. But it's got an advisory, which is my pet hate. I absolutely detest advisors on MOTs. Well, I don't mind them if they're not my cars. I laugh when it's other people's.
Yeah, like I did.
What do you think the advisory is? I've literally just come back.
Go on.
Corrosion on all four road wheels around the valves. Mate, I'm telling you now, yes, granted, this winter has taken... It's white steel wheels.
Surface grot.
It's surface rust. And you know when you get the sort of the rusty water stains?
Yeah.
Is that? It's not freaking like rusty wheels. They're not rusty. They're just a little bit scabby looking. But not as scabby as most of those steel wheels because they do tend to rust.
They do. They certainly do. And then when they have rusted, people tend to just lash paint over the top and then the rust continues, but you can't see it.
Which, to be fair, these have probably been painted in their time, but not in the ownership of me. But this last winter has taken its toll on the wheels.
Yeah.
Must have been excessive salt. But to be fair to the MOT station, they are very, very... this is a good place. It's up the road from here. They tend to deal with lots of classic cars, MGs, Land Rovers and the like.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I suppose he has to do something. He has to put something down. Could have been worse. Could have failed on something major. Something that would, you know...
I know what you mean. A little bit stingy, maybe, to put that down as an advisory, but I don't know.
MOTs. I mean, I had to change the rear shock bushes this week.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they were, I would say, prematurely worn.
I would agree with you. They'd gone very soft, and it was only because we'd filmed a video on the anti-roll bars, which you're coming soon to YouTube.
Yeah, as in, it never had anti-roll bars, had the brackets on the chassis, but to transform it...
Yeah.
We fitted front and rear anti-roll bars. And we only put a GoPro underneath, didn't we, to film the axle movement.
Yeah, and it was when I was reviewing the footage to upload it that I saw that we had it, the GoPro clamped to the sort of tow bar bracket pointing at the back axle, and the axle was going up and down, had like over an inch of travel probably, and the damper was just sat there doing nothing because the bushes were worn and it was just tramping up and down.
We'll put that footage on YouTube, won't we?
Yeah.
Because what it's done is highlighted, we wouldn't have known, or I wouldn't have known that they were...
Well, no, you generally, you can feel a difference back to back, but if they wore gradually, as they would have done, you probably wouldn't have noticed them get worse.
But today, just now, obviously going to the MOT and back, it's the first time I've driven it with the anti-roll bars on, with the rear shock bushes replaced to actual poly bush. So I just went all out and bought those.
Yeah.
And without the Penman Trail on the back. And I have to say, really, really impressed.
With lack of body roll, a bit sharper.
You just feel sharper. Yeah. I still think I need to upgrade the rear springs. So I've got standard height, standard sort of terra firma rear springs, but I might just up that a little bit, particularly when I'm towing a trailer.
Yeah, yeah. It's always kind of sat down a little bit at the back, your 90, hasn't it?
Even from there, it always has. Weird.
Even with the fresh springs, which we fitted not all that long ago, I think it's just, don't know, it's always had a slightly nose up, or at least a level stance, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I like them when they're a bit raised at the
right,
back.
Right, yeah. It's funny.
But almost, if you get in a military Land Rover there, they will sit too far up.
Oh, yeah, because they've got, like, hideously...
Yeah, they're too strong. Because I've owned one, and, yeah, you try and get in the back, it's like...
Well, it's a combination of the rear springs are either doubled up or they're super heavy duty, and they run the back tyres at about 70 PSI.
That's interesting about tyre pressure. So my trailer, military, that has it sort of stenciled on the side, 45 PSI for tyres, which are only, they're actually Michelin XZL tyres.
Yes.
Do you think that's a bit too much?
I honestly don't know for a trailer. There must be a reason that they specify that pressure.
Well, they're designed to take sort of an average amount of extra heavy-duty weight, aren't they? So if you ever look at my trailer, the axle is offset to the wheel arch so that when it's got weight, the axle sits in the centre.
Yeah, it's like when you fit parabolics to like an 88-inch series. And yeah, if you look at it side-on,
that's it.
The axles sit too far forward.
Yeah, so it's not centralised. So when it's got the weight applied, it sits.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Hmm.
But
I did. I did a check this morning. Well, waiting for you to pick me up from the MOT place.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. You were late.
Yeah, I was late. Yeah
traffic.
Because, to be honest, until you messaged me on the way, I forgot I was coming to pick you up.
That's my message.
Yeah, just as well.
Memory of a sieve. Anyway, I did a check. So I went from full tank to pretty much empty, full tank again. And whilst towing the Penman trailer all the way to Malvern Show last week and back, did 270 miles. And it works out at 27 miles to the gallon. I don't think that's bad.
That isn't bad.
Towing as well. On the run, though.
Especially as your trailer with the tent probably sits higher than the roofline of the 90 as well.
Marginally.
Right.
Yeah, I did it purposely so it wasn't too major. But you're towing about 850 kilos, I've worked out.
Yeah, it's quite a lump, isn't it?
Yeah. So that weighs the same as a small caravan.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Better than a caravan.
I was sometimes, randomly... My Freelander 2 will have a little hissy fit where it doesn't want to start the first time. You have to pop the key back out, put it back in, and then it's fine. It happens like once every couple of months, and I'm not stressed out by it at all. But what it does do is resets all the trip meters on like the dash,
okay,
including the MPG meter. And I'd sort of consistently been averaging 32, 33 to the gallon. Because I do occasional long runs, and it you know, combined.
But yours is auto, so it's a bit...
But I think that's pretty respectable.
Okay.
And it's only been better since I had it remapped.
Okay, yeah.
So before that, it would do sort of... I know you take what it says on the dash with a pinch of salt, but before it was 28, 29, and now it's 32, 33.
That's actually quite interesting. The last time I checked mine,
yeah,
MPG, it was doing 26 to the gallon. Without a trailer.
Really?
And that was before remap.
Ah.
So that I need to now check it without the trailer because it's had the Empire Tune remap stage one on it.
Yeah.
I think that's improved the economy.
Probably has.
Completely transformed the way it drives, I have to say.
It's obviously the longer term you calculate your MPG over, you know, numerous tanks of fuel, the more accurate a figure you'll get. But it does go to show back to back. It does make an improvement. And like you say, the actual drivability is so much nicer as well.
So on the subject of fuel economy,
mm-hmm,
interesting question. which model of Land Rover is the most economical?
That is a great question.
Don't know the answer.
So
I'm going to have a guess, though.
Go on.
TD4 Freelander 1 manual.
Yeah, that was going to be my first answer. Also, if you go a little bit newer, Evoque, Discovery, no, I'll tell you what it would be. When they're not breaking down, Discovery Sport front-wheel drive manual with the Ingenium.
Ingenium diesel.
Yeah.
What, we're talking mid-40s?
Yeah, apparent early to mid-40s have been reported in owners' groups and things like that.
In owners' groups. So dealer will probably say it's 55 to the gallon on a...
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. And you always get the numpties on Facebook and that who will like roll down a hill and then reset their trip meter so it says like 85 miles to the gallon. Then they'll upload the picture and go, oh, I went to Cornwall last week and look at the MPG I got.
Well, carrying a double axle caravan.
And everyone sees through it and you just think, get a life. But
there's no way, yeah.
I think that either that or an Evoque, because they're a bit more streamlined than Freelander 1 or 2, with front wheel drive and Ingenium. Because although the Ingenium's, we all know what the Ingenium's
okay,
like.
Okay, so back to proper Land Rovers at a four-wheel drive.
Are we ruling
That's harsh. Oh. Have I offended people with two-wheel drive Land Rovers?
No. I'm still going to get
an
ED4 or a TD4E if I can find the right spec.
I don't understand the point.
Well, if you just want something with decent ground clearance and comfort and visibility, then you're getting that. And they still, some of them still have a terrain response, so they're still like not completely useless off-road. Okay. But obviously you're never going to get the same
kind of
performance.
For me, it defeats the object. I don't know. So what, like four-wheel drive ones then? Must be Discovery Sport again.
Yeah, it's hard to say, isn't it? I think either late manual Freelander 2 or Discovery Sport. But the thing is with the auto, we used to have it... often customers would buy Freelander 2s from the dealer and then they'd come back and on the service they'd say, can you look into any faults? Because it only does like 29 to the gallon. And you'd be like, no, that's just how they are. Whereas manuals, you'd get like mid-30s if you drove like a lot of new Freelander 2 owners did, which was slowly.
I remember my Freelander 2 was... Because we often do with it, like writers rovers in the mag, don't we? And we often actually work out the MPG for that. And I remember that being 32, 33, I got.
Yeah.
But I do a lot of runs. So most of my motoring actually is on longer runs. I don't do that many short journeys.
I was going to say on mine, obviously, that it must have been near on a year ago when I had those issues and I thought the head gasket might have gone. I had the EGR valve off on the cooler because the cooler packed up and I had bits of engine apart. And apart from the turbo, which we obviously joke about.
I haven't mentioned that for ages.
It's because it hasn't gone wrong, Steve, touchwood.
Yeah.
The EGR valve was remarkably clean. I actually thought it had been blanked off because it had never given me an issue.
This because you're on longer runs as well.
I think I don't drive it hard, but I don't dawdle. And doing a decent run and using half-decent fuel probably helps.
Mm.
The EGR valve was fine. The injectors, to my knowledge, are original. So when you... I mean, it just rolled over 220,000 the other day.
Which is mega miles.
When you consider how much of that is still as it would have left Halewood, not bad going, really. And it's still doing 32, 33 to the gallon. At the moment, because I'm going to put a roof rack on it, which is something you'll also see in the mag and on YouTube.
Yes.
So that will no doubt knock a few MPG off.
Well, that's going to be really interesting to find out. I think you should do a
test.
Yeah,
I'll do a back-to-back.
Because you've got the back-to-back. Just reset everything. Do the same journey and then do the same journey again.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Because I have the roof rack on mine and front runner roof rack on mine. And it's quite low, so they call it slimline, so it's not as high up.
Yeah.
But even still, it's still extra drag.
It all matters. Tyre pressures as well are a big thing. In fact, a friend, well, as you've already mentioned on your trailer, a friend messaged me earlier, he's got Disco 3 and said, what should my tyre pressures be? Because they're something that people so often overlook, but actually do make a big, big difference when it comes to fuel economy. More on that soon, because we've got an actual tyre expert coming on the podcast to tell us all we need to know about how to look after what we've got and what to buy next.
I'll be interested. I might be in the market for new wheels, according to my MIT inspector.
I think...
But I can't get Evo Corsa wheels out of my head at the moment. Well, for some reason, that's not usually my bag, but I do like...
It's because the copper ones would look absolutely chef's kiss on your soft top. They would look beautiful.
Yeah, given the colour that it might...
Yes, indeed. I can't believe you let slip the colour to Jamie at the weekend.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Don't tell anyone, Jamie. It's a secret still. But what would you get then for your green one, do you think? Quickly. We won't dawdle on wheels and tyres because I know that we talk about them a lot.
I really like, there's somebody else on Insta with a green 90 and he's got those black, is it Bindo?
Blindos.
Blindos. Yeah. I would say Bindo, Blindo wheels. They look really, really good.
Yeah.
I quite like black wheels, but a lot of people are against them.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
No. So I've got black wheels. I'm not that sort of talk about Jags either, am I? Because someone's pulled us up.
Do you want to? You can talk about Jags.
No.
Go on.
It's going all right. No, I've got black wheels on the Jag. And it looks right on there.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah. I can't have another car with black wheels, probably.
I've seen a 90, your colour, the colour of yours, Coniston Green, with black wheels. It looked okay. To me, though, I just prefer white or silver, personally.
I don't want silver wheels.
I found this with the 110, which is obviously becoming closer to being on the road. I bought a set of wheels and tyres that Dan Dew was selling when I was over his getting my exhaust done. They're black Wolf wheels with G90s on. You might have even seen them in the latest YouTube installment of that vehicle. But I fitted them and it just didn't look right.
No.
There's nothing wrong with them. They're perfectly legal.
They don't look right on that car.
They just don't look right on that vehicle. I might keep them for the 109 just to have another set for that. But otherwise, I'll probably move them on. But,
so if anyone's in the market for them.
Yeah.
Probably editorial at lom.co.uk.
Tubeless.
I'm trying to clear your yard up for you.
You're doing me a favour because I don't need them. I don't need clutter. Shall I let slip what I've replaced them with, though, if people haven't already seen it on Instagram?
Yeah, go on.
Follow me, at Land Rover Martin. Thank you. I've gone for a set of standard tubeless Defender steel wheels, the same as yours, but not rusty. With...
I'll do a swap.
Period. I like to think kind of period correct.
What's that?
No.
Oh.
You can't buy them new anymore.
No, well, for good reason.
Well, probably, yeah. General super all grips.
Ah.
Do you know the ones I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Like a real, they're in 750 by 16, really skinny.
You see, it's the 750 bit that does it right, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't, it sounds fussy, but I for that totally standard Land Rover I didn't want to go to a 235 85. I didn't want to go to a wider wheel. I wanted the skinny little wheels, which will hopefully also help with not having any power steering as well. So yeah. And do you know what? I was so impressed with those General super all grips. I had them fitted, but the garage that I had them fitted by couldn't balance them because they didn't have the correct fitting for their balancer machine because they're like a non-hub centric wheel.
Oh, the garage on the road from here that did my punch repair doesn't have that either.
Yeah, it was a bit annoying.
But it is annoying.
I had another mobile tyre guy come round that he was actually putting some tyres on my wife's car, and I mentioned to him, oh, could you balance these up? And he was like, oh yeah, no worries, I do them all the time, I've got the fitting in my van. So he balanced them and he was like, I've never seen a mud terrain tyre that needed as little weight as that did. They were basically balanced from the factory.
That's interesting.
Absolutely amazing. So I can't wait to put them through their paces, really. Do a bit of laning and stuff like that.
Just very slowly.
Just really, really slowly.
Except the lanes aren't too far away from home.
I had loads of comments about my 2.5 non-turbo at the show, so thanks for that.
Yeah, so I bet people are erring on the side of converting it to TDI.
Yeah, I did get quite a lot of stick.
Depends who you ask, though. You see, the purists...
Well... This is the
thing. It's not very well being a purist, but I bet they don't drive a naturally aspirated diesel Land Rover.
You say that. There's a guy...
Daily.
On... Oh, you've put me on the spot now. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find him in time. There's a guy on Instagram. He lives in Europe somewhere, and he has a 2.5 non-turbo 110 with big tyres on it, like 900 by 16s, and he drives it to the UK regularly.
Yeah, in third gear, because it won't pull fourth or fifth.
Oh, I wish I could... I'm not going to be.
Do you reckon that would pull fourth and fifth gear?
Down a hill, maybe.
That'd be horrendous.
In other 110 news, I've ordered a heritage certificate from the British Motor Museum.
Ah, okay.
Have you ever got one?
No, and I've often thought I want one.
You should get one for your 90.
And it tells you the year, the day it was built.
All the build spec.
The spec.
And I think the first owner, which would be good for you because yours was like the Queen's or something.
Oh, you're on about this one, not the old one?
Yeah, you should get one for the new one.
Ah, see, I think that information might be limited.
Oh, really? Because it's so
Greg
secret.
King, I spoke to him long, long time ago, 4 years ago probably, and he said they were always very secretive about them.
Oh.
Don't know why.
That might be a waste of money then.
Was it about 40 odd pounds?
I think it was 52 or something like that. I just thought it'd be nice to have someone actually, again, that I was speaking to at LRM Live, Haddo with the Spanish challenge defender, mentioned that due to the reg, the OA reg, mine might have some factory connection. So I thought, it'd be cool to know either way. And even if it hasn't, then it'd be nice to have a heritage certificate. So I've ordered one from the British Motor Museum. So we'll see what it comes back with.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Do they go in like a filing cabinet?
I wish I knew. I think they must have.
I've got this idea of a bloke in like a brown kind of smock going off into the dusty archives.
Gets
dimly lit. One light will be out or be flickering.
A pigeon flies in through the window.
And then we're like, another one's ordered a heritage certificate. And off he goes down into the depths of beyond, blows the dust off.
Gets it out of the filing cabinet and goes,
yeah, like that, but in slow motion.
Okay.
And then wanders back all the time in the world, comes back and neatly packages you a certificate.
And then ties it to the pigeon again and the pigeon flies out the window.
Yeah, I didn't have a pigeon in my imagination, but it'd be a shame if you just logged on and downloaded a PDF or something.
I don't think we want to shatter the... I don't want to know
the illusion of... It's a bit like the illusion of this southern sofa, isn't it? It's quite comfy, do you not think?
It's all right, isn't it?
The sort of seat that you sit on at a cinema. It's that same texture, material.
It reminds me a little bit of, like, school chairs.
What sort of posh school did you get?
No, not like...
This is not posh, by the way.
Not like chairs that you'd sit in the classroom, but like chairs that you'd have in the library or staff room. Yeah, texture. Quite hard-wearing, scratchy kind of...
I went to school, you couldn't see what chairs the teachers were sitting on.
Is that because you're too busy getting the cane or whatever it is you got back in your life?
No, I was post-cane vintage.
Right.
But not pre-smoking vintage. So you'd go to the staff room, say, like, you need your... I don't know, to find a teacher, you'd knock on the door and someone would open it and you'd look in and you'd just see a sea of smoke, like teachers smoking pipes.
Wow.
This was even in the 90s, early 90s, the staff room used to be full of smoke and they'd have chairs like this.
I can well believe it. I can remember smoking in pubs and I can remember smoking when everyone used to smoke in the car. When everyone used to smoke in general, you very rarely see people smoking cigarettes these days out and about.
No, not really.
Compared to what it used to be like.
Oh, back in the day. Okay. Like, I mean, imagine, yeah.
I can never, everyone who I used to work with at the LRO, because we shared a huge office, they would say, oh yeah, I remember when this was all like, everyone would smoke at their desks and you just think it's like another world, isn't it?
Yeah, old school.
Yeah.
The only thing that you've got that smokes is your Natural Spare Diesel upon startup.
Oh, Steve. Do you know what though? It only does smoke on startup. I've had it up.
Yeah, but it's kind of reassuring though, I always think.
Yeah. I am genuinely excited to try it down the road and see if your ribbing is actually the case or if it's actually fine.
Please, 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 can you put a GoPro in the cab?
Well, we're going
to want to capture your first driving impressions of a diesel.
We're going to run it down the MOT station, aren't we, when it's
wet? Yeah, but please film your first road experience with it.
Okay.
Because you've never driven one, have you?
I have driven one, a 90 once, years and years ago.
Yeah, but mate, no. And then you'll go down the road and go, okay, and there'll be all this noise and you'll look down and look out the window and the ground will not be going past very quickly.
Yeah. I'll be waiting for the turbo that never comes.
It's almost like something's missing.
It is, a turbo.
Yeah, but it does feel so flat.
The thing is about that 110 is I've got a little bit of leeway. You say about purists not wanting to put up with that sort of performance. Because it's got a 14J Freight Rover engine, it doesn't have its original engine.
All the excuse you need, right? Bin it off.
Yeah, but
TDI.
I'm not ready to pile more money into it. TDIs are so expensive now.
It's a real shame. It is a real shame that TDIs have gone that way.
Yeah.
Because they used to be 10 a penny. A bit like Rover V8 engines.
Yeah, they've gone up a bit.
They have gone up.
They're just harder to find now than they used to be. They used to be everywhere. Now they're a little bit fewer, especially like the 3.9 intermediate engines, I call them, which are like V-belt, but also, or is it?
Is that called serpentine?
No, serpentine, they've got the flat belt. V-belt, they're a little bit shorter, so they're easier to fit behind the radiator of like a series or something like that. And then obviously they went to the 4 litre, which is coil pack rather than distributor. So, yeah. No, sorry, the intermediate is serpentine. Okay. So it has a serpentine drive belt, but it still has a distributor. And that sat between the old style V-belt and the new style coil pack V8.
Yeah, but then there was a later serpentine that didn't have a distributor.
Yeah, the 4 litre, as they called it.
Yeah, the 4 litre.
Exactly
still,
the same.
Still a 3.9, though, isn't it?
Same displacement, but it had a cross-bolted block and a few other bits.
That's correct. I remember now.
V8 geekery. I've spent a lot of time.
Which, incidentally, back on my original question about what's the most economical Land Rover, they are not.
No, they're definitely not. I do pretty much a tank of fuel on the way to Malvern and then on the way back. The Series 3 does a tank each way. Although it does only have an under-seat tank, it doesn't have a big tank at the back.
So what's my tank in my 90? I think I've got the receipt here because that's what I used to work out. So I managed to stick in today 46 litres.
Yeah, mine won't take that
much. But it wasn't properly... It was getting towards the orange. So let's say it's a 50... I bet that's 55 litres. Is that a 90 or 55 litre tank?
I would have to look it up. I honestly can't
remember. Tank being at the back of a TD5?
Yeah.
So, yeah, on 46 litres, it did 267 miles to Malvern and back with a bit of messing around.
Yeah, that's not towing. Awful.
I don't think that's bad at all.
I hope you've never got to do an in-tank pump on that. Oh, they are horrible.
You'll enjoy that.
No, I won't.
Well, let's not hope it happens.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
My wife, Louise, keeps reading Discovery 2 adverts out to me.
Oh, really? She's quite on board, is she?
Yeah, no, I mean, she actually wants one. When you've got this sort of green light, you can't help but look.
Would that mean the green 90 has to go, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know when you're so invested in it, so with anti-roll bars and, you know, we've done the spring suspension, discs, calipers,
sound
pads,
deadening.
Sound deadening.
Clutch, flywheel.
The flywheel, headlights.
Underseal.
Well, like dinner troll, done all of those things, at different tyres. Actually, when you think about what we've done in 4 years.
Yeah.
And yet there's me thinking I haven't actually done much to it. But we have. It's been serviced. So all that stuff done and service more than once, obviously. And I kind of gently tried to persuade her not to have one, but I said, actually, you end up with...
You're starting again.
You kind of end up with buying somebody else's problems.
You definitely
potentially.
Do, yeah.
That said, this might be a real perfect play. So actually, if anyone has got, that's not been on the market yet, something that is that might tempt me, I want a facelift. Don't know whether auto or manual. I prefer manual of them.
Okay.
Facelift Discovery 2 in really good condition.
This is a bit like Marketplace Live, isn't it?
Marketplace Live, tempt me.
I will sell you a set of wolf wheels and you can sell Steve your Disco 2 facelift manual.
Potentially.
There's a few about.
Yeah, there are. So she read one out yesterday. She goes, hey, what about this one? It's got 19,000 miles from new. On I think it's on Auto Trader, so check it out if it's still there. 20,000 quid.
Really? That's a lot of money, isn't it?
I mean, I haven't got 20,000 quid to spend on a Discovery 2.
That said, if it's pretty much...
I think it said it was Gavilan chassis. I'm sure it was the one with the Gavilan chassis. Why has it got Gavilan chassis at 19,000 miles? Anyway, it's 20,000 quid. And I thought, actually, I bet you couldn't buy a car, do the chassis.
No.
I mean, you could.
If you paid someone else. But would you rather tie up 20 grand in that or a Disco 5?
Well, we just walked by that Discovery 5 in town, didn't we?
Yeah. I'll be honest, they are growing on me.
No.
Not feeling it.
They feel like it. They just look too big for my needs. I don't need something that big.
I think the reason for the size comes from when Land Rover or any brand launches a vehicle, it has to compete with everything else in its class.
It's just too big.
Yeah.
I wish Land Rover, on Auto Car magazine, they always do the renders on the front cover, don't they?
Yes, they're infamous for it.
They are.
Are we talking about what I think we're going to talk about?
Is it the Baby Defender?
New Freelander.
New Freelander, sorry. Electric.
Yeah, it's made by this company in China called Chery or something. And it's basically licensed, I believe, by Land Rover. And they call it a Freelander. I think they're using the Freelander name. But it's a small electric SUV.
Oh, well, then that's... I just struggle mentally with, like, new Land Rovers to really... Apart from the new Defender. But I think we should go have a look and see, right? Because we were talking about earlier at a meeting, didn't we? And we were talking about, like, you know, the new Defender is 5 years old now.
Isn't it mad to think?
I know. And how much are they? They're still holding their price.
Yeah, I looked earlier, and I think the cheapest new Defender I could find on a Land Rover dealer website was 36 grand.
What was that for base spec? 90?
It was a 2022 90. Quite low spec, yeah.
You see, I would have to buy 110. Even though that's bigger than the Discovery 5, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of.
I think they don't look as big because the back wheel is closer to the back of the car. You've got less of a departure angle.
Yeah, I don't like that sort of slab side of a Discovery 5. That kind of the rear quarter just sits awkwardly for me.
They're a bit bulbous.
I don't think I could own one.
I think in the right colour combination, I could own one now. But again, unfortunately, you're choosing between 2-litre Ingenium or 3-litre TDV6, neither of which are known for their longevity. Or, of course, you buy the 2-litre petrol Ingenium, which apparently is quite good at a Disco 5.
That's the one I've driven that.
Is it? What did you think?
It went really well. So, 250 horsepower.
Was it thrashy, though? Did it sound
hot? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I quite liked it. It has a really nice sound to it.
Okay.
But economy-wise, because Pat, ex-editor Pat, had one on... for a week or two, it was like early 20s to the gallon.
Yeah, I can well believe it, especially when you're pushing on.
Yeah, it seems like a really highly stressed engine for something that's, I don't know, I just think that a diesel belongs in that, really, or a V8 petrol.
Here's the question then. Because we often get listeners' questions, don't we? Why don't we ask the listeners a question? If you're listening to this and you've got a Discovery 5, regardless of engine or spec or how, whatever, if you've had it, you know, a reasonable amount of time, how are you getting on with it? We want to know.
Would you recommend it to us?
Personally, I don't think I know anyone well enough who owns one to ask them. So if any listeners out there have got one and you love it, maybe you've had issues with it, maybe it hasn't put a foot wrong, drop us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, because we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. Just thinking, I don't know anyone with a Discovery 5.
No, I don't think
I do. Or a Discovery Sport.
I do know someone with a Discovery Sport. I know two people with a Discovery Sport, and they both really like them. One's I think it's 2018, which would be early Ingenium.
They didn't put the 2.2 in that, did they?
They did, but only in 2015.
Oh.
So if you look...
Because it's the Evoque 2.2.
When you look for a Discovery Sport, all the 2015 ones are really expensive compared to the early 2 litres because they're a lot more reliable.
Yeah, that's a 10-year-old car now.
I know. It's crazy.
You see, talk about cars, right? So, off-piste a little bit here. So, my mother-in-law has an Audi A3.
Right.
Little automatic 1.4 petrol car. TFSI, I think it is.
Yeah.
And she loves it. It's got 65,000 miles on the clock. And its engine management light came on the other day. But then it went off. And they can't find... They plugged it in and goes, not sure.
Right.
Anyway, so... brother-in-law says, oh, I think it's time you changed it. It is getting old. And I'm like, what?
Hang on
a minute. It's got 65,000 miles on the clock. You're doing around 4,000 to 5,000 miles a year in the car. A few runs down to see us, a couple of times a year possibly. That car should do 200,000 miles.
Yeah. I think what a lot of it stems
They're
from...
They're getting like, oh, should it be changed? I'm like, no.
Back when...
No rust.
My mum and dad were buying cars when I was little, like when I was a kid. Basically, the mindset was as soon as your car got near to 100,000 miles, it was ready to go. It was like, not scrap, but it was like, it was
going to... It's almost like a thing, yeah.
It was going to cause issues, buy something newer.
But my tolerance to a car, you know, like mainstream, these are people who buy cars and chop them in when they're 3 or 4 years old, you know, and then they'll PCP or finance, whatever. My tolerance to a car's age is mildly irrelevant to its mileage.
Yeah.
Just what I mean, because we've driven Land Rovers for years.
But then also, I've learned you're far better off if you see a low mileage car with, I don't know, maybe slightly patchy history, or, you know, you don't know, the whole picture's not there, or quite a, what would be a high mileage car, say 150,000 plus, which has had everything and you can tell it's been cherished and looked after, but even though it's been used a lot, I would pick the high mileage one any day.
Mm.
Because cars hate sitting. Look how many Discovery 3s, 4s, TDV8 Range Rovers, even Freelander 2s you see, which are like restricted performance because the turbo actuator's seized up because they've sat somewhere for months at a time.
Yeah, so I know somebody that buys, he's a carpenter by trade. He doesn't buy vans, he buys estate cars.
Okay.
And he never actually looks for a car until it's got about 150,000-160,000 miles on the clock.
Really?
And he runs them till they've got, till they're knackered, 230,000-240,000 miles, chops them in. Couldn't do that with a Land Rover, obviously, because he needs to get to work and back.
Do you mind 220k on the Freelander?
Yeah, but yeah, all right, yeah. Yeah, no,
she's,
you
barely
are,
run into,
you
Steve.
Are, you are true, it is true.
Just getting into a stride.
Yeah. Yeah, so is a turbo.
Anyway,
but I don't know. We like back to a Discovery 2 for me, right? I don't want a modified one, and I want it to be absolutely as clean as a whistle.
There was one actually I saw today on Facebook, an adventure spec pre facelift, Bernatti grey with the anthracite wheels and like the two tone leather, and I was like, it was £2,750 and apparently it was immaculate.
Cheap as chips.
And I thought, wow, that's a good buy. If that's genuinely as clean as it looks in the pictures, that's really, really nice.
Are they, though?
It's only in Melton as well. You should go and have
Melton Mowbray?
Yeah.
Is it still sale?
Bit of you guys.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know.
It was, I don't know if I'll be able to find it again. I didn't save it or anything because I'm not looking for one. But
no, I know, but it's kind of like, I don't know. What was that company? Well, I remember at the Billing Off Road Show last year, there was a company that did really nice Discovery 2s.
Oh, Mac 4x4 welding.
Yeah, but they weren't standard engines, were they? What did they put in?
Oh, no, you're talking about K2 Fabrication. They do like the Traybacks and Mercedes conversions and stuff.
Oh, I mean, that one's amazing if everyone's ever seen that one.
Mm.
But I mean, it's no good for me. It was the other one. There was
Mac 4x4.
It must have been Mac 4x4.
Yeah, they've got some really, really nice stuff. I keep meaning to go and do a feature with them.
But they've all been restored, haven't they?
Yeah. Some of them, they've got a few. They're sort of modified, but they are fully restored as well. So they're like hopped up, but also they're like new underneath. They're incredible.
Yeah, but they are incredible.
Yeah.
So is that the best Land Rover ever? Like, do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, the 90 for us is ideal, but not ideal.
I'll tell you what, going back to fuel consumption, my Discovery 1 that I had for many, well, about 5 or 6 years, I gradually, when I first bought that, it was a London car. It had lived in London its entire life, and the family I bought it from, lovely family, can't remember exactly where in London they lived, but we picked it up. It was totally original, even down to the 205 tyres, and it was...
They're
pretty
small, aren't they, 205s?
Yeah, they are. It had road tyres on it. Like I said, never been off-road. It had a few little dings around it where it had been in London.
Yes, London, yeah.
But it was such a lovely car, and it accelerated really briskly. It had EDC on it, being a late automatic, so it had the ECU-controlled injector pump.
That's not the one people want for conversions.
No, it's not. But it is actually quite good when it's working properly. So it was pretty brisk because they're a slightly higher power output than the non-EDC.
Okay.
And it was pretty good on diesel. Pretty good, 30 to 35. The more I modified it, so slightly bigger tyres, slight suspension lift, winch bumper, snorkel, the usual stuff you do when you want to do green laning and still daily the car, I made it awful on fuel. I think by the time I finished with it, it was doing about 23 to the gallon out of a diesel Disco 1.
That's not good.
And I'd never worked it out. I just obviously... It was my main car, so I just put fuel in it when I needed to. But it goes to show the minute you deviate from factory settings, if you like, even with tyres, even if you just do tyres, you are...
costing yourself dearly.
Costing yourself money.
But you're adding weight and resistance, aren't you?
Yeah.
But I just think... I mean, I used to get early 30s to the gallon from the 300 TDI Discovery.
Manual or auto?
Manual.
Yeah.
I've only ever had manuals of them.
Right.
I had an auto TD5. So this is what puts me off the Discovery 2. I had an auto one of those, and I just don't think the gearbox is set up particularly well. It kind of jumps from like top gear to kick down.
Yeah.
Top gear to kick down. It was like, make your mind up.
The worst thing about them as standard is on single carriageway roads, you're right on the edge of torque converter lockup. So it goes from...
Yes, that's right.
It flares up in like fourth, I guess you would call it, and it revs, and then it holds the revs. Drop down to torque converter lockup. And then you'll like come to a slight incline and it'll go...
That's the bit that annoyed me.
Yeah.
And because the roads I used to travel back from the old LRM HQ to home was these sort of between these roundabouts on this dual carriageway. And it seemed like it was forever changing gear.
Yeah.
And it annoyed me.
I used to play a game on the way back from...
Make a tune on it.
Nah. The old office, when I used to come out of the last village before the village where I lived, it was a pretty decent length of B road with some corners on it. I used to try and get the Disco 1 up on torque converter, so 50 mile an hour-ish, and then keep it on torque converter lockup all the way from the end of that village to the next one.
Sounds great for the environment.
Well, you wouldn't be thrashing it hard. It'd be revving quite low, but you needed to carry your momentum through the corners to stop it from kicking down. But a remap really helps with Disco 2 automatics, just a stage 1, just to wake it up a bit, because then it isn't constantly searching for torque in the rev range.
Yeah, see, this was bog standard. So I might have attempted. I don't know. I'm open to suggestions.
Here's a question for you then.
Yeah.
Off-road, do you prefer automatic or manual?
Well, actually, auto.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people think you haven't got the control, but you have. This one extra pedal you've got to worry about, you can just... It's safer almost.
Yeah.
Feels more controlled.
People disagree. Well, they might disagree. I had someone disagree with me before about this subject, saying that an automatic has the same engine braking as a manual. And the fact of the matter is, it doesn't. Whether you...
No, I think it's more controlled on a manual downhill.
Because it's a mechanical connection.
Because you can't actually... It can't... Yeah.
But everywhere else, automatic all the way.
For slow manoeuvring over, say, rocky terrain or something like that, and auto is so much better.
Smoothness as well. When you lose grip or a wheel loses grip, you haven't got that horrible snatching and shunting through the driveline. Auto, you can just carefully feed the power back on, and it just seems, everything seems kinder.
Yeah, see, now you see, I know I'm thinking an auto might be better.
But do get it remapped. Do put stage 1 on it.
I can't recommend getting a TD5 remapped to stage 1 enough. Because it has absolutely transformed my 90.
That horrible flat spot you get at low RPM.
I thought there was something wrong with my car, because that Gareth from Empire said that is what they're like.
Yeah.
And I was like, so there's nothing wrong with it. He said, nope, there's literally that. I said, wow.
They're all like that.
The TDI felt nicer in some ways.
Mm. I still maintain the 300 is probably smoother and more linear than the TD5.
I love the sound of TD5.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you either love them or you tolerate them.
Mm.
I like TD5s. I think they've stood the test of time, and people are obviously noticing them for their tunability. And, you know, they are an old engine now, and they're doing okay.
They're still old.
Thousands of them about. But for me, I just love the simplicity and the reliability of a TDI.
Mm.
Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. But that's for me.
If you own a Land Rover, Range Rover or Jaguar and have had trouble with your diesel particulate filter, the DPF, then listen carefully. Lee Day, a major UK law firm, is leading a group claim against Jaguar Land Rover for allegedly faulty DPF systems in diesel models made between 2015 and 2023. They already represent nearly 20,000 Land Rover, Range Rover and Jaguar drivers in a no-win, no-fee compensation claim. To see if your Land Rover qualifies for the claim, visit leedaylaw.info/JLRDPF today.
Should we have feature of the week then? Are you ready?
I am ready.
Good. This week's feature of the week is, of course, on the in the July issue, which has not long come out, and it is a rather lovely Discovery 2, which has been restored and modified. Talking of Discovery
2. Oh, well, there you go. I better read this, hadn't I?
Beautiful segue. By a chap who works as an engineer at JLR. But the reason he's bought this isn't that. The reason he's bought it is because it belonged to his mum and it failed MOT on horrendous rot. And then he's gone, do you know what? I'm going to buy that. So he did. And he's essentially made it his perfect sort of utility, but out of a Disco 2.
Okay, yeah.
So he's truck cabbed it. He's fitted slightly larger tyres to the original 18-inch alloys. He's put a hidden winch in it, and he's put a tray back on it. And it is a really, really classy design. He's done a really, really nice job on it. The finish of it, you'll see in the feature, of the sort of step-by-step how he's done it.
All built at home.
Yep, all done at home. And yeah. All the back of the cab is all metal as well. It's not a bolt-on kit. It's not fiberglass or anything like that. And he's just done a really, really stunning job. And he uses it for going out mountain biking and he does green laning in it, as you'll see. And yeah, it's a really, really stunning thing. So please do grab a copy of the July issue and check it out for yourself because it might inspire you.
Might inspire me.
I
could do with the back seats there.
Obviously, yeah, you would have to keep the back half of any Discovery 2 you bought rather than put a tray back on it. But yeah, it's just a really nicely turned out thing. For the record, I'm showing Steve a picture of said vehicle.
Is they like bronze wheels?
Yeah. Ooh. Well, they're like a coppery, slightly brighter than bronze. I think that is the colour you need for your...
Probably.
I very nearly let slip the colour then for your soft top 90.
I mean, I'm 90% sure.
We're 90% sure. Should we roll seamlessly into a product of the week?
I bet you've got one right teamed up.
You're absolutely...
Teamed up? Teed up.
You're absolutely right, Steve. I have. This, in fact, going off our talk about fuel consumption and tyre pressures, if you want to keep your tyre pressures at the optimum setting at all times, what you need is Ring Automotive's new Ultra Inflate tyre inflator. Coming in at a very reasonable $59.99. It's the new flagship inflator from Ring Automotive. It's got a 3.5 metre wind-up power cable, which plugs into your cigarette lighter, extra long inflation hose, and a dedicated deflate button for if you want to drop your pressures if you're heading off green laning or whatever. Digital readout, which automatically stops when it reaches the preset tyre.
That's actually really quite handy.
I've got the older version of this, and I use it all the time. It is getting a bit worn out now because I use it a lot.
Sounds like you need to get on to buying a new one then.
I think maybe I do. Backlit display and dynamic progress bar so you can see how long it's going to take for the tyre to get up to the right pressure. What more could you want from an inflator?
That's really quite a good idea.
All for £60.
I always think, you know when you go to like petrol stations and people say, a pound, they want a pound for just air.
Yeah.
But it's not though, is it?
No.
Because they've got to run a compressor.
They've got to maintain it. They've got to put up with people smashing into it and abusing
British
it.
British always get dented out of cases. People always...
Yeah.
I'm not paying a pound for air, but who's paying for it? Just get your own.
Yeah, exactly.
And you should check... Most people should check their tyre pressures more often than...
Far more regularly than they do. Yeah. 100%.
I'm on it. My tyre pressures are... Always checked.
I need to do the Freelanders, actually, I must say, because I haven't done them for a while.
How long's a while?
A couple of months.
What? Yeah. Is this?
But you can normally, I've obviously driven that car for a long, long time now. I can sort of feel it. I've got quite a good feel for that, so I know if something's amiss.
Yeah, I get that.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll probably check tyre pressures every...
I should do it more, I must admit.
I'm going to admit probably 3 to 4 weeks.
That's pretty...
Yeah, I reckon it's to do in highway code. Says what, once a week?
Yeah, I know.
Is it highway code?
I don't know.
Or whatever.
Who's going to do that, though? You should, but who has the time?
Not me.
Tell you one thing I did have a little while ago on that Discovery, actually, that blue 300 TDI I had, was I think it was Michelin brand tyre pressure monitor. And it's like a stick-on little screen that goes on your windscreen, solar-powered, so you never have to change the batteries in it. And, like, the valve caps... replace your standard plastic valve cap and it tells you your tyre pressure's on the go.
Hey.
Yeah.
Clever.
Yeah. I think I've still got it somewhere. I might refit it to the Freelander. The only thing I didn't like about it was obviously because I got a little battery in, the valve caps are quite bulky, so they don't look that attractive if you're that bothered about it. But really, really handy thing. And it saved my bacon a couple of times. I had a split valve on the way back from an off-road site and it beeps at you, and whichever tyre is going low flashes at you.
Okay.
So I pulled into a tyre place and they changed the valve for me, and off I was. Mm. Off I went.
Off you was.
Off I was. You might need one of them soon with your rusty wheels.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. That's like an excuse to buy new wheels to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Any excuse is a good excuse. We've put up a new tech tip of the month on YouTube. Have you seen it?
I have.
Did you like it?
I watched it yesterday.
Yeah. All about Rivnuts and Rivnut guns.
I have a Rivnut gun.
You do?
And it's brilliant. They're brilliant tools to have around.
They're very handy, especially if you want to install accessories, but you want to do them neatly, or like on, if you fit a raised air intake to an older Land Rover, sometimes they'll give you fixings, but you have to get the nuts up the inside of the inner wing and then do the screw up, and you haven't got enough hands and it's like all fiddly. If you just put riv nuts in the wing, you've saved yourself tons of time. And if you need to take the snorkel off again, you haven't got to strip out the inner.
It's just neat.
Really, really neat. Yeah, Machine Mart sponsored that video. So thanks very much, Machine Mart. And if you want to get yourself a Rivnut gun, the model off their website I would recommend, which isn't the type I use in the video because it's a little bit fiddly. If you're going to buy one, I mean, it's only 40 quid. The Clark CHT879, which gives you capability from M3 to M8 Rivnuts, which is quite big.
It is actually quite big.
M8's pretty big. Short handle, but a lot less effort to squeeze the Rivnuts in than a single-handed type that I used in the video. That's just what I had on hand.
So I've used your Rivnut thing, and you have to return it, don't you, at the end?
Yeah, because you've got less, you can apply less pressure because the handles are shorter and it's at a right angle. You have to spin the Rivnut onto the thread, give it one squeeze, then adjust it in a bit further and give it another squeeze to make sure that the nut's fully crushed.
I see.
Whereas with one of those dual handle types that machinemark.co.uk sell, it's a one action thing and it's a lot less effort to make it snug.
So you're putting a few in, a bit like when you do pop rivets.
Yeah.
You can do them all day long. You've got those, what do you call those ones?
Lazy tongs.
Lazy tongs.
Yeah.
But I've still got my mate Pete, he lent me it like 3 years ago. Still got it in the shed, an air riveter. Worth its weight in gold.
Oh, they're so good. Yeah, air riveters. You can get electric ones now as
That's
well.
That's a Machine Mark one as well, Clark.
Is it?
Yeah, really, really good thing to have.
They're, yeah,
proper. It's addictive. If I could get a job just pop riveting, I don't want a job, but I actually enjoy it. I find it quite therapeutic.
Well, when you put all your cappings back on,
yeah,
you'll be able to.
I did my trailer on all the sides.
It's a very satisfying noise, isn't it?
Yeah.
An air riveter.
Yeah, it is.
In other news, Mark Parsons has got in touch. He's emailed in about the podcast a few times before. He must have seen my Scalar Nationals trip where I went to Derbyshire to look at the Scale 4x4 Nationals, and obviously Boom Racing and FMS, who brought radio-controlled Land Rovers to LRM Live. He says, congratulations on a year of podcasts, because the last podcast was our anniversary.
But did it even have cake?
We didn't, did we? We really lost. We sort of missed the boat on that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to have a delayed birthday party with a podcast cake.
Ooh.
There's an idea.
Yeah.
He says, congratulations on a year of podcasts. Here's to many more. Absolutely right, Mark. We have got no intention of slowing down. He says, I love the idea of a model/RC section of the magazine moving forward. Well, Mark, have I got news for you? That is exactly what will be happening in a few issues' time. We'll be introducing a small section dedicated to diecast models, radio control stuff, and anything that's sort of fun, interesting, because we saw just how many people were into it at the show.
Yeah, it was quite an eye-opener, actually, how many people enjoy it. We're all just big kids, aren't we?
It's just, yeah, exactly. They say, don't you, you never grow up, your toys just get more expensive.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely true. So, yeah, we'll be doing reviews, we'll be doing new product, new stuff that's new to the market. Build series as well. There's going to be all sorts in there. So keep an eye out in the magazine.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. It's been something I've been meaning to do for a while, but I wasn't quite sure how well it would be received. But I think now I've seen it in person, how many people at the Scale Nationals had Land Rovers, how many people at the Land Rover event were so into the RC stuff that I can't not do it. So hopefully readers will like it. you know what else I thought of the other day, actually? Someone, again, on Facebook had posted this joke that I must have seen 20-odd times on Facebook, and it's about how... So, yeah, this guy's away for work, and he's down in the bar having a bit of dinner, and then he gets chatting to this fella at the bar, and he sort of, like, strikes up a bit of a rapport with him. He's having a laugh and this, that, and the other, and he goes, oh, you know, I made my millions on Land Rovers. And he goes, oh, wow, how did you do that? And he's talking about how, you know, he started at his mum and dad's house, bought one Land Rover, fixed it, fresh MOT, sold it, did another one, took on a small premises, built up a little business, and then took a couple of people on, and then did more Land Rovers, kept turning them over, a bit of servicing work, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Kept on going. And then his uncle died and left him millions of pounds. Yeah. Something like that. I've probably done a terrible job of recounting that. But it did make me think, have you heard any Land Rover jokes recently? And if you haven't, your homework for next week's podcast is to bring me the best Land Rover joke you've ever heard.
Me?
Yeah.
Bring you one?
Yeah.
Okay.
There must be...
The biggest Land Rover joke is you drove to the MIT in the natural aspirated diesel. Look, I will chuckle more at that than anything.
I think you've just got terrible memories of yours, and actually it's not that bad.
I've owned that engine 3 times. I should know. I'm well qualified.
What made you think, really? Why do you think it's better in a series than a
the gearing?
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yeah, it's down to the gearing, mate. They're just so much nicer than a Series 3.
Mine's got 1.6 and transfer box, though. So maybe it'll be similar. Or maybe it'll it'll do 50 flat out.
Yeah, but in a series, you forgive it. I think we said this a couple of weeks ago. In a series, Land Rover, you forgive it to be slow because you're comparing it to a 2.25 diesel or 2.25 petrol.
Yeah.
They're a little bit better. But in a Defender, when you damn, you know, you know that, like, TDIs are available,
right?
It's like,
yeah. Harder to forgive. I suppose
I'm telling you now.
Yeah, I don't know, we'll see. But no, seriously though, do come up with bring me your finest Land Rover joke.
If anyone can help with this ahead of time.
You've got the standard ones as well. I want some good ones, not just like the classic, which is like, did you know all 80% of all Land Rovers ever made are still on the road and the other 20% made it home? I want some good ones.
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay.
That's your homework.
Go find one, yeah.
Gauntlet's been thrown down.
Yeah, okay.
So I want to...
I'm just excited to see all these lovely Discovery 2s. Never been seen before. Don't want to compete with all the other buyers. I want that exclusivity.
Do you think people will come to you first? And
no, probably not.
Well, maybe. I don't know. They probably know they won't get any money out of you.
Well, I'm not saying that.
You've got another Land Rover to build and a Jag to look after. What's your budget for Discovery 2 then? Come on, if Louise is invested in it, I want to hear it.
I don't really know.
I'm putting you on the spot now.
Yeah, I don't really know.
I reckon 5K.
I think that should buy, 5 grand should buy a really, really nice one.
Yeah, if you look hard, if you look and you're fussy about it, I think 5 grand would get you a really nice one.
And because there are a number of them available, I want to be fussy. I don't want something, you know, when the sunroofs were resealed or the headliner's all sagging.
Yeah.
I don't want an old nail. I want something that's respectable.
Yeah, no, I get that. I do understand what you mean.
You can just tell, can't you?
Yeah.
You always want a low owner car. It's been looked after, but unmolested, unmodified. Any modifying needs to be done by me, not the original owner.
Yeah. That's sort of where...
So actually, I think this car will come from a podcast listener.
Do you think?
Not going to like a Land Rover show, per se.
eBay.
Yeah, not eBay.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But a podcast listener might be thinking, oh, actually...
I don't need that lovely facelift manual Discovery 2 anymore. I'll sell it to Steve.
Yeah, but they might have more than one Land Rover, you see.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, tempt me.
Do you know what one of the weird telltales is for me? When you go and look at any vehicle, that it probably hasn't been looked after as well as they claim. When you open the driver's door and the bolt that holds the check strap to the body has come a little bit loose and the driver's door makes that horrible clacking, cracking noise as you open it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because all you need to do is tighten that bolt up and you fix that horrendous noise. And the fact that you haven't done that means you're probably not that bothered about anything else.
Or they're not mechanically minded at all.
Well, maybe, but you'd think if you took it for a service, you'd go, oh, the driver's door makes a horrible noise when you open it. Can you just have a look? If you're not bothered about something that annoys you every time you get in the car, how bothered are you going to be about everything else?
For me, going to look at a car, I like it when they present the paperwork.
Okay.
In a file, in order, of what things were done.
You're asking a bit there, but I agree with you. I agree with you.
Do you not keep paperwork for your cars in order?
Not as much as I should.
I do.
I think it's because generally I don't have much paperwork for any of my cars.
No, because you do yourself, but like invoices and things and MOTs, I have a file for all the vehicles. All the vehicles, sound
all but my entire fleet.
The whole fleet. Yeah, but I've got paperwork for 4 vehicles and a motorcycle. It's quite a bit.
Yeah, that is quite a bit, yeah.
And that's quite a lot of old MOTs and old bits and pieces. So it's quite, and I like to keep it in order.
Fair enough.
And all the books and everything, and the spare keys are all hidden away. So then, if you ever go to sell something, it's organised.
Far more organised than I am.
Yeah, but then because for years, it's like this fresh MOT certificate sits on the passenger's seat right now when I get home. That will go in that file.
Really?
Because it'll be the one that you'll put it aside, and then you forget about it. Then you'll go to look, where's the MOT gone? And it's amongst other paperwork. Yeah, I've learned from years of...
Yeah, fair enough.
I like it when the file gets presented and they go, here's all what it's had. And I'm like, oh.
Leather-bound file.
Kind of like...
Oh. Your heritage certificate on top.
Yeah. Do you know what? That, to me, shows that someone's invested in the car.
Yeah.
Because they've done that.
Yeah.
But I've never purchased a car with a heritage certificate. But now I want one.
You should get one. I definitely think you should get one.
Yeah.
Because then it would make me feel better about spending 52 quid on a piece of paper, if nothing else.
No, you've spent £52 on the man in the smock going down into a dusty little room.
Getting his pigeon out.
Yeah, I just his vision of something.
You know for a fact it's going to be someone in an office at a computer searching it digitally and then printing it off and putting it in an envelope and then sending it, don't you? I hate to shatter the illusion.
Yeah.
If anyone works at British Motor Museum and can tell us the absolute truth about what goes on with heritage certificates, I don't know if I want to know, though, actually. Many listeners will never know the secrets of the salmon sofa.
See, we were going to put a picture up of the salmon sofa, but now we don't want to spoil the illusion.
I took a picture of it.
Have you?
Yeah.
Are you going to do it post?
I don't know. I haven't decided. I might see how much demand there is. Maybe we could start up a Patreon for the salmon sofa.
Yeah.
If you want to see it, that's £5 a month.
We could ask Mr. Warner himself, the owner of the entire business, can we own the salmon sofa?
Can we buy it off you?
No, don't buy it.
I'd like to own it. It's a piece of history now. Dunsfold collection, mate.
Can you imagine? We're donating it to the Dunsfold collection.
It'd be a joke, wouldn't it? But Phil Batchel would be like not able to contain his laughter, I think, if we went to him and said, we've got a real piece of Land Rover history for you here.
Yeah, 1 year's worth of LRM podcasts have been recorded on said sofa.
It's a peachy pink colour and you can sit on it. What a treat.
Do you think he'll want the matching coffee table?
I might have that with glass. It's quite nice, isn't it? Anyway, right, we're getting off track again. I think we need to call it for this one.
I do as well.
So, thank you ever so much for listening. Please, please, please send any questions you've got, any feedback you've got, editorial@lrm.co.uk. Follow him on Instagram, Steve Miller Automotive. Follow me on Instagram, Land Rover Martin. Follow all the LRM pages. Check out the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the magazine. Sign up for the newsletter. Listen to me doing marketing.
Yeah. Have you changed jobs?
That's the most I've done in a year, probably. But no, we really appreciate any...
Yeah, we do. 1 year in, and we want to carry this on, and without all, you know, with all the listeners' support, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Encouragement.
I'm very happy.
Me too.
So, yeah, cool. Righto. See you next week.
Over and out.